Hey everyone, it's Colin. How's it going? They are one of the biggest audio companies in the world with a very recognizable name. So why do audiophiles almost universally seem to hate Bose? So for a really, really long time, we're talking decades now, audiophiles have generally railed against Bose products with the explanation of the gear being inferior quality, offering poor sound, and just overall being more expensive than it should be given their performance. And I do tend to agree with some of the assessments. I don't necessarily consider myself like a really hardcore audiophile, but I know how I want my sound to sound like, and I know what I'm willing to pay to get to that level of sound quality. But I also know that I'm not really willing to go off the deep end and spend exorbitant amounts of money to try and eke out just a little bit more sound. So I tend to consider myself a little bit more of a practical audiophile or a little more mainstream of an audiophile. So I feel like I've got a good handle on not just the situation, but a decent perspective where I can kind of see it from both ends. So I figure, you know what, this time, let's go through and kind of unpack the argument, see really what the deal is with Bose, and why do audiophiles feel the way that they do? If you ask any audiophile, you know, why they dislike Bose, and have them start to get into some of the deeper technical discussions, it really always comes back to the engineering and the build quality. It almost always comes back to like the hardware and not so much some of the other factors, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in this episode. You generally look at products in the price range that Bose sells at, and the other companies that sell in that price range, those companies tend to focus on quality components, putting really good quality parts in their products, but they also tend to have fairly traditional engineering. So you look at, say, Klipsch or Polk or some of the other, maybe not elite brands out there, but other, you know, fairly well-known names, but names known specifically for good quality sound at those same price points, and they're all going to have products that look fairly similar, right? You're going to be looking at, say, bookshelf speakers or tower speakers or any other home audio products that are going to have a fairly similar design to them. Maybe drivers of a certain size are made out of certain material, you know, woofers and tweeters. They're not going to stray too far from the norm of what they've always done. They're going to keep pushing the envelope in terms of trying to make those parts better and better, but they haven't really rethought the way that speakers, you know, if we're talking about speakers, the way that they should look or the way that they should go about reproducing sound. You can almost compare speakers from some of those manufacturers being made now with ones from 30 years ago. They'll be very similar overall in design. So Bose does things very, very differently. And I think that's one thing that tends to trip up the audiophiles. Instead of looking at, okay, how can we build better quality, you know, cabinets for our speakers, or better quality drivers to put in the speakers, or better quality electronics, Bose instead looks at it from the perspective of how can we make the speaker sound better to the listener, or at least how can they make the speaker sound to the listener the way they want the listener to perceive it. This is a concept called psychoacoustics, and Bose is the undisputed king when it comes to doing research and exploiting concepts of psychoacoustics. It all comes down to how does the human brain perceive sound? And taking advantage of some of the ways that that works and other quirks just inside our heads when it comes to listening to music and perceiving the way sound is. And Bose takes all of that research and all that engineering and designs the products around it instead of the other way around. So you'll look at like a traditional speaker, and it'll have, say, if it's a bookshelf speaker, it'll have a woofer and a tweeter. It'll be a two-way design. The woofer is going to be for low frequencies, and the tweeter is going to be for high frequencies, and they'll cross over at some point. And that traditional speaker manufacturer will have designed that speaker in such a way to, you know, have it be a fairly seamless transition from, you know, sound frequencies from the woofer to the tweeter. But ultimately, when they test those speakers on human subjects, if the humans say, well, you know, it sounds like this or it sounds like that, generally the way those manufacturers will tweak the sound to get it to be more like the way they want is to make changes to the physical design of the speaker. If someone says, oh, the bass is too boomy, or the bass is too tight, or there's too little bass, or there's too much, or whatever, the designer of the speaker will go back and make tweaks to the actual design of the speaker. You know, maybe they'll add a bass port. They'll turn it into a ported design if the bass is too weak, or if the bass is too boomy, they'll maybe switch it into a sealed box design or something like that. What Bose does is it starts twiddling knobs in its portfolio of tools that it can use to tweak sound. The way Bose tweaks sound is it does very, very heavy EQ and in some cases digital signal processing. And Bose has been doing this for a very long time. So because they rely on heavy EQ within the speaker and heavy DSP within the speaker, it allows them to do more non-traditional arrangements or unique arrangements in terms of the actual hardware. So where you would have, say, that traditional speaker with a woofer and a tweeter, Bose, in a lot of cases, does something completely different. One of Bose's quintessential Bose-like speakers, if you're looking at some of the weird tech that they've done, the way they've made speakers that are non-traditional over the years, is the Bose 901. It's very different. It, you know, from like the outside, it kind of looks like a traditional, you know, bookshelf or you know, tower speaker you'd put on a stand. But the engineering is way different. Instead of a separate woofer and tweeter, instead it's just got an array of these 4.5-inch drivers. And all of those drivers play full range. Now, what's especially unique about the 901 is that the majority of those drivers actually face away from the listener. They're bouncing off of the walls behind the speaker, and only a single 4.5-inch driver on each of those speakers fires towards the listener. Now, beyond the whole concept of the reflected sound and all of that, just looking at the hardware of the speaker, 4.5-inch drivers are not optimal for playing full range. And I think generally most anyone who knows a decent bit about audio would tend to agree. Large speakers are better at reproducing low frequencies. Small speakers are better at reproducing high frequencies, which is why woofers and tweeters look the way that they do. So how are you supposed to try and get good high frequencies and good low frequencies out of a 4.5-inch driver? Well, this is where Bose cheats, and they make heavy use of equalization, where even with the 901s, which came out decades ago, they have you run an external equalizer box, and they tell you very strongly you need to use this component in order for the speakers to sound correct. And that's been the case with a lot of Bose's other speakers as well, is there's always been some level of equalization involved to try and get the hardware to sound the way that Bose intends it to, even if that hardware itself on its own just can't do it. It lets Bose build speakers at a lower cost simply because, one, it's using more common parts. Like, it's cheaper for Bose to just stick a bunch of these little common 4.5-inch drivers in a speaker than it is to build all these different parts, you know, separate woofers, separate tweeters, and all that for these designs. But it also lets them share that technology and engineering across multiple product lines. It almost turns Bose's lineup into a whole bunch of like Lego bricks, where they're all pretty similar in terms of shape and size, and they just put the right pieces in the right place. And if it's not optimal with what parts they're using, well, they'll just go back later and tweak it with the EQ or the DSP. And it's the same thing, not just with its home audio engineering, which is probably what most people are familiar with from Bose, but even also into its Pro Audio engineering line. And I've actually used some of Bose's Pro products before, and this is actually where most of my experience with the company really comes into play in terms of speakers, but there are some very common elements. So you look at the Bose 901, and it's that home speaker with a bunch of these 4.5-inch drivers. Well, then you look at one of Bose's Pro products, like the Bose 802. It looks really familiar. It's got the same 4.5-inch drivers, and it's got them in that same type of arrangement. And also, they expect you to use their proprietary external processing unit to get the sound to sound the way that they want them to sound. And now, the Bose 802 and its smaller companion, the 402, they're older products, and Bose has definitely moved into newer product lines, but a lot of that engineering is still very similar, where they're just sharing the overall technology between the two sides and just tweaking it to fit the exact application that they're targeting. Now, it also comes down to marketing in some ways. We've seen and heard stories of audiophiles, some substantiated, some maybe not so much, where you got to kind of take their word for it or listen to these stories with a bit of a grain of salt. But as part of that whole EQ and just tweaking the sound to make people perceive it the way Bose wants, in some ways, Bose has kind of done a little bit of dirty pool when it comes to its demo setups in stores. I've read reports of Bose custom tailoring demo setups, say in, audio stores, stereo stores, to suit the room that those setups are in exactly. Maybe putting more time and energy into tweaking that system to sound good in the store than any consumer ever would into getting it to sound good when they got that product home. I've also read reports of Bose supposedly not allowing side-by-side comparisons between its products and its competitors, not letting them be in the same room or not letting them share some of the same equipment. So you can't A/B some of the parts independently. Bose speakers through the same receiver as a different brand of speakers, and you could tell the difference, really trying to very tightly control the experience that people have. And you can kind of see some of this in stores. Bose has been getting better, I should say, but for a long time, when you would walk up to a Bose demo station at a bigger box store, say like a Best Buy or Costco or Target, something like that, where they wouldn't necessarily have salespeople there to talk about the products, and instead the products kind of need to sell themselves, you'd walk up to, say, like the headphone demo station, and the music would always just be a canned selection of it. So you could put the headphones on and listen to them, and maybe you could tweak the volume and change tracks, but you wouldn't have any control over the actual music being played. You couldn't pick, say, your own song, so you couldn't really reference that against other music that you're familiar with. Now, this is something we'll get to in a moment, but Bose has been getting a little bit better in that regard, in that a lot of the demo stations, at least the ones that I've seen, now allow you to plug your phone in and play your own music through the headphones. But it still makes you wonder, because you can't see that entire signal path. You can't see the headphone cable coming out of the headphones and going into your phone. Often it goes into that demo station. Who knows what's going on inside that demo station? Are they running additional amplification? Are they doing some additional tweaking, some DSP in there to get those headphones to sound even better than what they would just inside the cans themselves? So these are all things that the audiophiles tend to really kind of latch onto and cause them concern and cause them to freak out about the company. Whereas a lot of the other audio manufacturers, at least the ones that kind of go after that higher end market, the audiophiles themselves, are a lot more transparent with, like, look, here's the engineering behind our products. We'll give you all the specs and all the data points and all the spec sheets and technical information that you want. we'll let you compare them fairly head to head against other brands. You know, they really tend to stand behind their products and the engineering, whereas Bose is a little bit more secretive. It's hard to get any sort of technical data out of Bose, to get spec sheets. It's really, really tough to see, say, like EQ curves and stuff. Generally, Bose doesn't publish those. So if you wanted to see what the frequency response of a speaker, of a headphone or whatever was, most often you have to look for third parties that have done that testing on their own. And Bose generally goes after those people to pull down their reports. I've heard of lawsuits from Bose suing companies that have talked negatively about them, you know, reviewers and product magazines and stuff like that. You know, where somebody publishes, say, an unfavorable review of a Bose product, there have been some famous cases where Bose has gone after them to try to get them to pull their review down or something like that. So that tends to leave a bad taste in audiophiles' mouths. So you've got that technical perspective of people not liking Bose just because of the way that they design their speakers. They tend to use cheaper components and lesser quality components and don't necessarily do their homework, in quotes, to make the speaker sound as best as they possibly could, or the headphones or whatever product it is. Instead, they just rely on psychoacoustics and just twiddling all the EQ knobs to get them to sound good enough. Well, you know, I said at the beginning, and I'll say it again, and I'll probably say it again later, just as a reminder, I'm not the biggest fan of Bose products myself, but I see where the company is coming from, and I see what their intention really is. The thing that a lot of audiophiles tend to forget is that Bose isn't targeting them. Bose isn't interested in audiophiles. I don't think Bose has ever really advertised themselves as being an audiophile-focused company. The big thing with Bose is that it really targets the mass market, regular consumers. And if you look at Bose's marketing, this really bears it out. You're not going to find so much Bose stuff at the higher end audio shops, of, you know, which they're still existing. There's not that many. I mean, it's probably another podcast topic to go into just the nature of how we listen to music these days versus, say, 20 years ago. But you're only really going to find Bose in kind of the more mass market types of environments, either in its own stores or in the larger big box kind of retails, like I mentioned earlier here in the US, places like Best Buy and Costco and Target, where you're not necessarily going to be competing with other high-end audio products. In stores like those, Bose is probably going to be some of the most expensive audio gear that you will find. Everything else is going to be less expensive. And part of that plays into the marketing. I mean, there's the subtle concept of stuff that's more expensive must be better, and I think Bose definitely relies on that as part of its message. But it's also just done really, really good work for itself in terms of getting its name out there and getting the general public to think that Bose products are high quality, to think that the sound is high quality. And, you know, to be fair, for the average person that isn't really into audio, that isn't really, you know, doing tons of homework into all these other brands that are going to be a little bit more niche, smaller names, they're just looking for a simpler product to, you know, take home and plug in, but still sound, quote, in, you know, in quotes, sounds good. You know, Bose, I think, resounds with them really well. You know, they have a very favorable opinion of Bose. They think, boy, you know, I've heard the name a lot, and their products are pretty expensive, and lots of other places, you know, and people that I've talked to maybe own Bose products, and they generally think they're pretty good. So, you know, it's the concept of what is good enough. And for the vast majority of just casual listeners, Bose products are good enough. And I think that's one of the things that Bose is banking on. Now, that said, Bose has been changing a bit recently. It's still heavy into doing sound processing and psychoacoustics and all that, but there does seem to be a new focus at Bose on trying to overall improve the sound quality or refine it. The common complaint with Bose before was that the bass was really, really boomy and the high end was really kind of lacking in detail and all that kind of stuff. Where the sound is very kind of unoffensive, I think is the best term that I can think of to use to describe the way Bose sounds. It's meant to sound, in quotes, good. They generally want to try and get their products to sound as good to as many people as they can. But it seems like there is a new focus at Bose to kind of refine that a little bit better. So we've been seeing them move a little bit more towards traditional speaker design, and we haven't been seeing that so much in the home audio realm from them, because their home audio realm has been changing dramatically. Bose seems to really be pushing more towards headphones and then things like Bluetooth speakers. And I think, again, that's another podcast topic, but it's just to change along with the way that people tend to listen to music at home now, or, you know, on the go, whatever. But you look at Bose's Pro products, and they're starting to move more towards traditional design with better discrete components and not doing so much the arrays of these little 4.5-inch drivers, but rather getting into better and more appropriate components for the solution that they're trying to solve. You know, instead of a bunch of things running full range, we're actually starting to see some of Bose's professional products using, say, compression drivers and horns, having better design for, say, their subwoofer units, trying to cut across more aspects of Pro Audio and not just coming out with a few solutions that they say, well, these are just general purpose, you can use them for anything, you know, like the Bose 802. For a long time, Bose advertised the 802 as kind of a do anything type of Pro Audio speaker. And now they're diversifying the lineup to try and better fit all of these different markets and use cases. And they're bringing more traditional technology along with it. So Bose is definitely changing. I don't think they're going to necessarily go completely away from the way they've always worked with, you know what, let's just build the boxes, the equipment itself down to a price, and then just EQ the hell out of it to get us the rest of the way. But it definitely seems like they're trying to compete a little more fairly with other companies. Whether they'll ever be truly successful at that or not, I don't know. But in the very least, the Bose of now is definitely different than the Bose of, say, 10 or 20 years ago. That's all the technical side of things, though. But that's, I think, only half the story as to why audiophiles hate Bose. There's definitely more to it. And a lot of it just comes down to the nature of audiophiles and why otherwise they may hate that company. Most obvious reason is, beyond the technical side of it, it's expensive for what you get. The pricing is not in line with its competitors. Or maybe the pricing is in line with other audiophile, you know, grade components, but the Bose stuff just doesn't perform. I think that's going to be a subjective opinion. Again, it comes back to which audience is Bose actually going after. They're not going after the audiophiles. They're going against the mass market, the regular Joe Schmo who wants a home theater system to take home and plug in. That kind of person is not necessarily going to be doing the homework or even know how to do the homework to find all the different parts and pieces that they need to put together and then how to put them together and get them to sound their best. They just want to go to the store and buy a box with like a home theater system in it or speakers in it and take them home and plug it in and be done, you know? So there's that argument. So it also kind of comes down to the sound quality, right? It ties in a little bit. Well, the sound quality isn't as good. Well, sound quality is a subjective thing as well. And like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of the way Bose stuff tends to sound, but you know, I wouldn't call it bad. And there's definitely some good things that Bose does. Case in point, where Bose has used its DSP knowledge and experience really well are in its noise-canceling headphones. I own a pair of Bose QC25s. I bought these with my own money a few years ago. And the reason why I bought them is because the noise canceling on them is excellent. I did a review on these actually a few years ago. That review is fairly old now, so take it with a bit of a grain of salt because it's not really all that current. The QC25s have been replaced with newer models and all that. But what I said in that review, and I still stand by the statement, is that they sound good, but not great. But overall, they are an excellent pair of headphones, simply because the noise canceling works really, really well. They're good enough. When I'm going to need a pair of noise canceling headphones is likely not when I'm expecting the best possible audio experience. You know what I mean? I have headphones here at home that sound way better than these QC25s ever could hope to. But they're not appropriate headphones for me to take out and sit like on a plane with, right? These are great for when I want good enough audio in a suboptimal environment. So some of it's also kind of taking the whole, well, Bose just doesn't sound good, in quotes kind of sentiment, and putting it in perspective, putting it in context. I think a lot of the times where Bose products are used are in environments where it would be really tough to get sound to be good anyway. And coming back to my experience with Bose Pro Audio products, I've used them in some environments where traditional speakers actually wouldn't do very well. Bose Pro Audio stuff tends to work really well in places that have high reverberation, where you really need vocals and speech to cut through high intelligibility. That's where some of that weird Bose engineering actually tends to work pretty well. Music doesn't sound nearly as good through them as through, say, traditional Pro Audio speakers, but sometimes you just need to get the job done. And in some cases, they actually do perform pretty decently. So, you know, it's kind of the audiophiles cutting a wide swath, you know, painting Bose with a broad brush, all these other euphemisms to, you know, basically say as a company they're no good, when I think that's not necessarily a fair statement to make across the entire company. The biggest one, though, I think, and this is one that audiophiles may start giving me crap down in the comments about if they haven't already, is that, you know, audiophiles, I think they need something to hate. I think they need some company to vilify. And to be fair to the audiophiles, this isn't just an audiophile thing. I've seen this cut across a lot of other communities and groups and such, where for whatever reason, you know, the diehards within that community tend to focus on just one company or, you know, one thing and turn it into their nemesis, turn it into their villain. For audiophiles, it definitely seems to be Bose. I mean, you don't see audiophiles complaining about the quality of, say, Sony audio products really quite so much. Why? Because Sony doesn't charge the same kind of prices that Bose does. Bose is priced and seems to be acting like it's an audiophile brand, even though they haven't really ever advertised themselves as being such. And I think that's what really triggers the audiophile. So Bose has become the audiophile villain, their nemesis. But we've seen similar things with other communities. You look at, say, the PC enthusiast community. I'll give you 5 seconds to blurt out the name of the company that you think is the nemesis amongst PC enthusiasts. Yeah, I'm sure 90% of you just said Apple. If not 100% of you just said Apple. PC enthusiasts love to hate Apple. They absolutely love to hate Apple. They just need a nemesis. Apple does plenty of stuff right. Apple does plenty of stuff wrong. Apple and Bose are actually very comparable in some ways. But the PC enthusiast community, they've got to have their villain too, and it happens to be Apple. Are PC enthusiasts going to complain about, like, Acer or HP or some other big company with the same ferocity that they'll complain about Apple? No, because Acer and HP and Dell and those other companies market themselves differently. They don't seem to try to sell their products as being PC enthusiast or, you know, at PC enthusiast pricing like Apple does. Apple products are expensive compared to what you get. Like I said, they're very comparable to Bose in some ways. But Apple has never really actively advertised its products as being PC enthusiast level. I don't think Apple has ever said, yeah, go out and buy this really expensive laptop and you'll be able to play all of your games the same way and with the same quality that you would on an equivalently priced PC. They've never done that. So it's the same thing. We've seen it again also, I think, to some extent in the gaming community, the console gaming community. You know, the people who are diehard into the Xbox or the PlayStation, I've seen them complain about Nintendo in the same way. Well, Nintendo, they charge as much money, but the performance isn't as good or whatever. Across all these communities, they need somebody or something to hate. And I think a lot of that comes down to this concept of tribalism. We've talked about tribalism before. It in a nutshell, it's like a threat, right? For some reason, audiophiles think that Bose is a threat to all the other audiophile-focused companies. And I don't think that's the case at all. That's like never going to be the case. Do you think a big company like Klipsch or Paradigm or Definitive Technology or somebody like that, ELAC, any of those, do you think any of those are really actually threatened by Bose? Do you think anyone who is serious into audio and going to, say, a boutique audio dealer would go through a demo of one of those high-end brands and leave that demo going, nah, you know what? I'm gonna go back to Costco or Best Buy and buy that Bose setup for the same amount of money. Nobody's gonna do that. Nobody is gonna do that. If you've gotten to the point where you really consider yourself an audiophile, you're just never gonna consider Bose anyway. So it's that tribalism, and I think it's just unfounded fear on the part of the audiophiles that Bose is somehow a threat, even though they're really not. So, with all of that said, I am, of course, curious as to your thoughts. Do you consider yourself an audiophile, or at least are you into good sound quality and all that? What kind of products do you own? Do you own any Bose stuff? Do you own any Bose speakers or headphones or anything like that? What are your thoughts? If you've not bought any Bose products, why not? I think the answers to that one are going to be pretty similar, but I'm just curious. So leave all your thoughts down in the comments below. Just be nice is all I ask. Also, if you're interested in audio-only versions of these podcasts, they are available as plain MP3 downloads for all supporters at all contribution levels over on my Patreon page. They've also got RSS feed support, so you can get your own URL, dump it into the podcast player of your choice, and you'll get it automatically. Plus, these podcasts tend to go up on Patreon a few days before they show up on YouTube, so that's all just something to think about if you're interested. Anyway, if you like this one, I would appreciate a thumbs up. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram @ThisDoesNotComp. And as always, thanks for watching.